SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Tuesday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online, and I guess that suggestion from yesterday, we appreciate the listeners calling Casey and saying that they got some direction from Sirius XM customer care about uninstalling and then reinstalling the SiriusXM app, and that would fix any issue you're having about the market area blackout, as if you were tuning in to the to your regional football team without the sellout. I mean, a throwback to years ago. The website too, stevebick.com. Gotta take care of the ongoing weather woes, and you could slap that moniker now. Weather woes. It will not relent. And yesterday, another late decision to take a race off the turf, and I referenced this yesterday. And, going back to Saturday and getting the all in the last leg, when it came yesterday, it was for the ninth race, and it did come before the pick four started. So the all only applied to the pick six and the pick five. But it also only left you 15 minutes, and it's not. I had to bring Tino, go pick her up at the auto dealership. She brought her car in, and timing. I couldn't adjust. I didn't get a chance to go back to the website and make any changes. And I don't know how he necessarily would have. You don't get necessarily in that amount of time. You didn't get every horse that was going to scratch. They didn't scratch within those 15 minutes. The sixth race went off at 3:48, and there were horses scratching out of the ninth. So there really wasn't time to adjust your pick four. I'm sure a lot of people. In fact, now that I say that, I hadn't even thought to look at what the final handle was on the late pick four. Well, still handled 538,000, and it brought back 205, and it was really with take charge Aubrey, who was an easy lean in that eighth race, and chances are you only used a couple of horses. You're to blame, and take your guns in that mile and an eighth event. And take your guns. Take your guns needs to regroup. He's struggling. Went off less than 3-2 and did not lift a hoof. And You're to Blame sat a nice trip under Johnny. It was fun to talk to Johnny yesterday about his wins in Chicago and a little bit more. Karen's Gem, who was obviously one of the obvious players that we talked about with Jeremiah. So anyway, this turf scenario, and I mean the turf is just sodden. There's no other way. Our lawn at home looks great, but a lot of damage to the course over the weekend. that's why everything came off on Sunday. Give it a chance to knit and repair divots and so forth. But boy, we need some wind and we need some sun. Right now the sun's out, but there's even a chance for light rain later today again, 7 to 10 o'clock. There's a little bit of precipitation literally in the forecast on a daily basis. And this is a little unusual. I mean, it's been a long time since we've had a wet summer like this. Honestly, we've been very fortunate for an extended period. But I can tell you from the years doing the barbecue, there were a couple of summers. It was one summer when it rained, I want to say, 26 days out of 40. There was rain at some point during the race day, 26 out of 40 days, or 27 even. And then there was the year. It literally did not rain during any race day. There was one day, I think on a Sunday at 6 o'clock, we got some rain. But otherwise, it only rained at night or on Tuesdays. That one's got to be about, that's probably about 8-9 years ago. It was remarkable. But you got to grin and bear it. And, you know, that includes dealing with, you know, some of the short fields. Interestingly, you know, hitting the early pick five, you know, the first pick five paid $2,100. And, you know, with all due respect to, you know, to the frustration, you had a sequence 4 by 7 by 6 by 9 by 8. And the Jenna Antonucci import, the invader from Gulfstream, here's what, you know, what we talked about at the beginning of the meet. Silver Wings Revan got the lead, built a big lead on Kendra Carmouche, and just was not turning back. And longest shot on the board, almost 12-1, paid $2,540. And then there was Asian Wei, who was 3-2, who, you know, was obvious, and Shanghai Dreams was even money. A single easily. Then there was Fog of War getting up, ran very well. That maiden group looks like a nice group of horses. All the way down to Seismic Jolt, who got the lead early from the 10 hole. Fog of War got up past All About It, the George Weaver firster for Randy Hill and John Shute. And there was Current, the Eclipse, and Bob LaPenta firster. Fog of War, All About It, Current, and Seismic Jolt. This was that rich group of horses that, when I wrote it up, I wrote up the pricing, and those were the four prices. No, I didn't bet the Superfecta. I'm not a super bettor, but Seismic Jolt, $800,000. All About It, $425,000. Fog of War, $400,000. Current, $725,000. And the four expensive horses run 1, 2, 3, 4. But, I mean, I only used Fog of War and Seismic Jolt. Those were the only two that I used. And then in the anchor leg of the pick four and pick five early, Light Worker, who was one, there were four horses to me that could win. I had Light Worker as fourth choice, but it paid $1,380. And so the pick five comes back $2,112, $2,112 if you included the Antonucci, and maybe in retrospect, the thing to do was to buy that race. And that was a nice, you know, with all of the challenge of adjusting to the off the turf, that was a lucrative sequence. And the pick four paid $72. I had it a couple of times, and that was okay. I mean, it sort of made the day, you know, made the day worth trying. You want to hit to justify, you know, putting the effort in. And you know, yesterday a couple of people got a kick out of you know, my getting annoyed, and I got annoyed on TV on Sunday too. I don't understand. And I mean, I understand frustration when you want to bet turf races. I had a nice conversation with somebody, you know, who is a turf bettor, and okay, yeah, this is a lean scenario for you, at least here. But there's other places you can shift your focus. They run a lot of turf at Del Mar, but if you're serious, you dig in and you refine your approach, and this is no different than getting back to the discussion about leveraging opinion and betting, you know, heavying up on your opinion. So, we'll look to Week 5 starting tomorrow at Del Mar and at Saratoga, and Pacific Classic week there and Alabama week here. As mentioned yesterday, the third condition book, third and final condition book out for Saratoga hit the web yesterday, and was looking, got our 2-year-olds, I was looking to see when they might run. Looks like the last week, the last 10 days, last give or take. So, part of the focus. We'll catch up today with Boyd Browning, who will summarize from Fasig Tipton's vantage point the 2 yearling sales. We'll get kind of the postscript here to the high-profile early returns, the yearling season, July sale, of course. They kicked it off, and then this terrific 8 days. 8 days? Where did we go? Monday? Yeah, Monday. 7 days. Monday through Sunday. We'll also get a couple of conversations in about the conferences and the presentations that I mentioned yesterday. The Jockey Club Roundtable from Sunday. Matt Hegarty will be here at the bottom of the hour. And there was a lot of important conversation as part of the presentations. And the Jockey Club, eager to, you know, to help, they brought McKinsey back with an update. As I mentioned yesterday, the 2011, the comprehensive market condition study, and they updated it with some interesting findings, a lot of which we already knew, but some things actually that at least prompted from the Jockey Club side the suggestion of some initiatives that give you hope that, you know, the Jockey Club really has got, you know, some positive direction and initiative that particularly focused on the wagering side, which is not something that you've heard all that much from, in a lot of ways, from the Jockey Club, but some very, I thought, encouraging suggestions. And they also, you know, gave and offered, said that they would be willing to support smaller tracks financially with either grants, funding, or even taking over some of the smaller tracks. Very interesting. We got a lot more. Dick Powell, too, on the law conference. John White,
Howard Belver will be here to talk about winning his third Long Acres Mile. Much, much more back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Join us at Presque Isle Downs for our two biggest days of racing. Sunday, September 16th, the $200,000 Presque Isle Mile. Monday, September 17th, the Grade II $400,000 Presque Isle Masters. North America's top filly and mare sprinters compete in the Premier Breeders' Cup Prep Race. Free Presque Isle Masters hats for the first 1,000 fans. Free T-shirts each night for the first 500 fans. September 16th and 17th, Presque Isle Downs, Erie, Pennsylvania. For more, go to PresqueIsleDowns.com.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Do you want unlimited access to handicapping without exorbitant prices? Then BrizNet.com has you covered with a variety of plans for past performances, pedigree, and raw data. The BrizNet.com Performance Plan offers unlimited PDF past performances for just $75 per month and is available at BrizNet.com/PP. American Produce Records Online puts the pedigrees of nearly 1 million dams and more than 2 million foals at your fingertips, plus sire stats, for only $275 per year and is available at BrizNet.com/APR. The BrizNet.com data plan offers unlimited access to race day data files, perfect for handicappers with their own database or to plug into other people's programs. The data plan is just $125 per month. Visit BrizNet.com for all this information and more, and discover why BrizNet.com is the handicapper's edge.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Used to keep it cool, used to be a fool, all about the bounce in my step. Watch it on the news, what you gonna do? I could hit refresh and forget. Used to keep it cool. Keep it light, stay out of the fight. No one's gonna listen to me. If I write a song preaching what is wrong, will they let me sing on TV? Should I keep it light? Is that right?
We're back at the races, about 20, coming up on 20, into hour one. And I mentioned Matt Hegarty will join us. Looking forward to Matt's recap of that roundtable conference. And you can watch the replay online. And this was, I found the McKinsey going back to 2011. We had a lot of conversation out of it and reference it all the time. I mentioned yesterday there were some things that were suggested that made a lot of sense for the industry, and they were not fully adopted. There were things, you know, particularly exposure on a national televised basis that was taken to heart, and we'll get into everything and Matt always has a great perspective. There's also some other hard news that I usually reserve for Matt that we can work into it. There's that very suspect race from Mountaineer
last Wednesday, if you haven't seen this, with the favorite, a 1-5, a 1-9 favorite that basically went out to the outer rail, and that one might not pass the smell test that's being looked at. But we got quite a bit, and we haven't talked to Matt in too long. So Matt Hegarty, bottom of the hour. I want to get back to some of the results, particularly in the outlying areas. It's so easy to get immersed in Saratoga and Del Mar and then a little Ellis, but there's plenty of other racing going on, and I wanted to note a few things that otherwise will get washed away. And by the way, yesterday we talked to Maya Engelhart, and he did have Pride of Saratoga running at Finger Lakes in that Jack Better Be Right stake yesterday, but as feared, as you heard from Maya, he was worried about Frosty Margarita, and she's a 5 year old now, and she's made over $500,000, and she got her 8th win. She's a familiar presence in all the state bred action, and this was a clever maneuver. We'll see if she's going to run again end of the week, but Rudy Rodriguez sent her out, and the Gabrielle Farm Homebred by Frost Giant, she went to the lead and held Rosie Jersey safe, as well as Pride of Saratoga. So Maya basically gave you, he said he thought Rudy would be tough to beat in there. I'll tell you who was tough to beat at Woodbine over the weekend, and particularly on Sunday. I don't know if you saw this. I put out a tweet, and it caught my eye, and I went to go watch the Wonderwear, the $250,000 Canadian filly standard, and Josie Carroll and Ivan Delos, they won with Avi's Mineshaft, a mild upset, more than a mild upset, I guess, because Dixie Moon, she overhauled Dixie Moon, and she went right on by, and that's a nice win for them. The mare, Avi's Empire, the Empire Maker, and this is, of course, a Mineshaft, and God bless Ivan Delos for the way he names his horses, because earlier in the card, on the second in the second race, they had Avi's Flatter. And Avi's Flatter, a first out winner. So the half siblings, they win on the card, both. Maiden Breaker and look good doing it as well. So Josie Carroll and her big client, Ivan Delos, Tall Oaks Farm, with a couple of wins. Got to mention Norm McKnight with Decorated Soldier, Wire to Wire, Gary Boulanger, and they win the Seagram Cup on Sunday as well. And McKnight's done a terrific job with Decorated Soldier. I wanted to slip that in. And Ian Black, we haven't talked to Ian in a while, but Red Cabernet in the Victoriana. Emma Jane Wilson, who's obviously back and in good form after the injury. And there was also Cassie, Win the War. The Warfront takes the Duchess, Patrick Husbands. And Mike Maker went up and invaded, won the Flaming Page with Daring Duchess, the Arch. And Hernandez aboard there. So I wanted to get those in. And there's a horse that Ron Paolucci and I, Ron alerted me. I saw the result, and it looked like it was worth looking into. And then Ron further enhanced my interest. But if you didn't notice the Ohio action, and I'm just Now I'm reaching for my, oh boy, why do I, this stuff just piles up, these, my charts. The win at there was two. There was Thistledown and Belterra, but at Thistledown in the Honey J, Altissimo, and this is a horse that's on a real roll, 95 buyer, a noble causeway, and then Ron, I happened to, when I was kind of recording the, I do it every weekend, the stake results, and it kind of just caught my eye that I said this horse win, was won three in a row. And beat Ron's Mo Don't Know, who, of course, has had great success against the Ohio Breds in that company and an open company. But Richard Zielinski trains, and Liz Rankin and Nancy Laverich, they own. And it looks like a homebred. And the five-year-old Altissimo. And, I mean, that's a real fig. I mean, that's... You start racking up mid-90 buyers. That's a very nice performance. Wanted to acknowledge them. And there was also, speaking of some regional action, how about Valerie Lund, who, of course, we've talked to over the years, Attaboy Roy. Well, Mr. Jägermeister wins the Minnesota Derby at Canterbury, 99 buyer. Goncalves Road and Mr. Jägermeister. That's a big effort. Joe Sharp won the Oaks with First Mate. With Eichel Berry aboard. And, yeah, a couple of, I just don't want to, can't live by Del Mar and Saratoga alone, right? There was also the big Iowa weekend starting Friday night at Prairie Meadows. Then the Saturday, the Breeders' Derby and the Oaks and the Governor Branstad and more. So, summer racing. And there's also the fairs going on out west. I'm going to bring you Howard Belvoir to talk about the Long Acres Mile and about as important a regional event it really is there is anywhere in the country. John White will be here later, and John also will undoubtedly pay tribute. And the Belvoir family are, just they're an institution. They're like the Bayses, and there's any number of Pacific Northwest and regional powerhouses. Howard and Van Belvoir and. Van, of course, not only trained a winner of the Long Acres Mile, he won during his riding career. Kind of cool. Suppose John, I got to look. Johnny Longdon probably did that too, right? I would expect. John White will know, undoubtedly. So, and the other, I talked about champagne problems with Ian Wilkes yesterday. It was fun to have Ian, and he got Calvin Burrell that win, and obviously Ian and Calvin Burrell, the ties are long-standing. But how about Larry Jones and Gabe Saez? Because Believe in Royalty won that Ellis Park Derby that was part of the groupie doll card. And Larry Jones also ran second with Cowboy Karma. Believe in Royalty, Baker, Mack, and Brary Jones. Brary Jones, who bred the son of Tappet out of the wonderful Believe You Can. And I'm going to guess this Ellis Park Derby will get a little bit more money thrown at it and grow into something, you would think. Kind of fills a vacuum. Cowboy Karma went off favorite, actually, a little under 3-1 and was coming late. They both were coming late. But Gabe Saez and Larry Jones, the trainer-jock combination that brought you Hardspun. There was also a Cassie Gary Barber maiden winner that looked pretty good. Do not ignore these Ellis Park maidens. My Sixth Sense, a street sense out of a Mount Livermore mare, bred by Brent and Beth Harris, and first out winner, beating Ian Wilkes and the Green Lantern homebred Dark Web, making a second start. But My Sixth Sense with Sean Bridgemahan, who's having a terrific meet at Ellis. And that got Cassie off the duck. He had been 0-for-5 coming in. So there was also Into Trouble, Ben Colebrook for Donemeyer. And that was a handy winner. Went off by a couple of widening lengths. If you didn't see that one, going 7/8 too. So keep an eye. Don't ignore what's going on at Ellis, because these are horses that are going to turn around and impact the fall when we get to Keeneland and Churchill. So there you go. There's a little bit of a roundup. We'll do more Del Mar action. John White will go through a lot of the Del Mar conversation. We'll also look at the way the Pacific Classic field is shaping up. But right now, let's take a break. We'll come back. Matt Hegarty is going to join us, and Matt will take you through the Jockey Club Roundtable, which evaluated the state of the game and really, I thought, struck a positive tone in terms of proactivity. You know, more wagering support. Less Lasix discussion, thank you, if we're going to pick and choose our topics. Yeah. I can't recall the roundtable spending as much time on wagering issues as this presentation does. They talked about pricing. They talked about wagering innovation. And most notably, in fact, one of the topics that came up a couple of times last week, roundtable and at the law conference, was fixed odds wagering, which we've talked about for years. I mean, forever we've talked about it. With the late Stanley Bergstein, we've discussed fixed odds wagering that Australia has offered and could be a real tonic and a major innovation to help particularly new players who don't understand when they bet a horse at, you know, with 10 minutes to post at one price and then have a different price when they cross the wire. New players don't understand that, and fixed odds would help people wading into the game. Not just people wading into the game, could help a lot more. So some interesting things came out of the roundtable. Matt Hegarty will walk you through them when he joins us next.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
The thoroughbred breeding industry will never be the same with the launch of Daily Racing Form's Buyer-Sire Performance Standings, presented by Darley. These groundbreaking ratings use buyer speed figures to measure a stallion's performance beyond wins and earnings, focusing on providing a measurement of a sire's true ability to produce high-quality horses. View the Buyer-Sire Performance Standings at drf.com/buyer-sire and get the true information that breeds results. That's drf.com/buyer-sire.
Are you on?
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track. for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and Kent the Summer on Afternoon Delights, absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade One race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
I am a passenger and I ride through the city excise. I see the stars come out of the sky. Yeah, the bright and hollow sky. You know it looks so good tonight.
We're back at the races. Matt Hegarty has been a passenger on the bus to the round table for God knows how many years. How many years how many of those have you attended, Matt?
I would guess it's at least 20 in a row. But the good thing is I started working when I was 8, so I'm not really showing my age.
Well, not all roundtables are created equal, and there's some that kind of rehash old news. And I thought what came out on Sunday it was pretty noteworthy, Matt. And we've revisited the 2001 McKinsey study with some updated portions, and it really felt like the Jockey Club sounded a sense of urgency on some topics, and most notably, wagering was really top of mind, and I don't recall that all that often from this setting.
Yeah, that's kind of one of the big takeaways from this roundtable is that in the past, the Jockey Club has not looked at these wagering issues as being, you know, paramount. This year, they announced some things that would impact betting customers. You know, one being support for a reduction in the takeout of the win play show pools, support for the authorization for fixed odds wagering, and also this idea that they were prepared. And I don't know yet, you know, what exactly that means, being prepared to kind of act as a financial backstop if a track were to be in threat of closing, and then also to provide funding for tracks for upgrades, including HD capabilities. So there's quite a few things in there that do impact fans. In the past, it's been more inside baseball. You know, integrity concerns are obviously always, you know, top of the mind for bettors and handicappers. But, you know, even above that, dealing with kind of the nitty gritty of the wagering market was definitely a welcome turn for the Jockey Club this year.
Agreed. And that's an area that the playing public has, I think,
being concerned is nebulous, but it's an area that, you know, players have had a disconnect, or they feel a disconnect from industry officials at large, and whether it's the tote providers or the platforms or racetrack management. We've had this conversation, Matt, about the takeout discussion and the misguided takeout increases in many cases that, you know, that got a appropriate backlash from players. And whether it's innovations like a fixed odds concept or, you know, the industry making a concerted effort at finding, you know, what optimal takeout really might be. And that discussion, it was part of the presentation.
Yeah, and there's not entirely good news on that. While they did say they supported a slight decline in the win place show takeout rate, they also said that that the exotic takeout rates pretty much remain competitive with other, as they called it, low price, high reward bets that are competitive with those. And in the experiments, we really haven't seen a whole lot of movement in those pools anyway. So, but all the experiments that have been done, we've discussed this, you know, many times before, have been short term. They've never been designed to go long enough to see if there is a measurable impact, and that's why you probably get the panoply of different results for when one track for, you know, a couple weeks or a couple months cuts takeout. You did see, you know, absolutely a decline, you know, at Keeneland last year, but that wasn't a function of betting operating, you know, in a market. It was a function of the backlash. You know, it was people saying, I'm not betting Keeneland because of this. So the industry still needs really good data on that. They're not going to get it unless someone cuts takeout, unless the industry itself cuts takeout across the board. It's just you can't get good data from these isolated circumstances. So if the Jockey Club can put, you know, some pressure on the TRA, which is a trade group of racetracks, to get those tracks to cut win, place, and show, that would be a big benefit for bettors. But those exotic bets aren't, they did not recommend that those decline. And then, you know, reading between the lines, it sounded like the Jockey Club didn't really have a problem with computerized wagering systems, which obviously are controversial in the industry. There's points to be made on both sides, but it did seem that they were comfortable that those groups are playing in the pools.
And that was kind of a follow to the discussion, because the natural progression of that presentation included what size and what role the computerized groups are having. There's several topics that you could morph into in conversation. The perception difficulties when their money 30 or more percent hits the board in the last minute, and with the final flush of money being drawn in. The numbers that Jockey Club provided said that they sense that it's a just about critical mass for the batch wagerers at 20%, and that has been the number that, you know, has been bandied about, you know, pretty broadly.
Yeah, and you know, if they are 16 to 19%, as the Jockey Club is saying, that they're rapidly reaching, you know, that limit. You know, there's so many issues surrounding these programs. And that market is just so opaque. Obviously, there have been rumors, you know, for the last 5 years that more guys are coming into the pool, specifically at Stronach tracks. You know, you've seen these incredible increases at Gulfstream that just don't seem to make any sense unless there's some computer players that are now playing it. And, you know, I talk to horse players all the time, and I'm a horse player myself. And if they said that computer wagering has doubled since 2011, I don't know a horse player that doubts that. We're all seeing that the odds are shifting more and more closer to post time. Now, that's not entirely a function of the computer wagering. you know, the best horse players, the guys that are most sophisticated that aren't using, you know, robotic programs, we're all punching our bets in at the last minute too. So, you know, now we can bet on our phones. We don't have to stay in line. We can bet on our computers when we're at home. And it's kind of creating a feedback loop, because now, since you're so unsure you're going to get the price you want, everyone is waiting, you know. Everyone is waiting until to the last possible moment. I've had, you know, two instances up here where I was just like, you know, this is incredible. You know, I waited as long as I could, and I still had horses that I really liked get cut in half. So, you know, it's a confluence of factors. It's not just the computerized programs, but every horse player you talk to has said it's gotten the market has gotten more dynamic at 1 minute to post now than it was 5 years ago. So I don't doubt that there could be a doubling in that handle sort.
Had conversation on Sunday on TV with the Matisse brothers, with Duke and Paul, and you know Paul is about as savvy. He and Maury Wolf are frequent guests on this topic. The challenge for the smaller player, the recreational player, and even the individual player that is sophisticated and has probably a rebate in place for themselves too, Matt, there's something of a growing discontent on this topic. And I mean, what recourse is there? And the Maury Wolf sounded an alarm more than 15 years ago that this issue would come to a head, and that, you know, the computer assisted wagering groups needed to be either monitored or limited or not allowed. Did you have any private conversation at all that, you know, beyond what was said publicly in terms of Gagliano and Stuart Janney?
No, not yet. There's going to be some follow up on some of these topics. You know, I've been very unsure about whether or not this is great for the game, that if you're chasing these short term returns with these, you know, huge handle numbers. You have to remember, you know, the rebates that are going to these guys and other players, including, you know, if you're a serious player, you probably do get a rebate. I get one. But if you're growing handle from these computer players, the revenue that the racing industry is receiving back because of the rebate, you know, it keeps getting smaller and smaller. So even if you get a large handle jump, you're not seeing revenue jump at the same rate. So if the industry strategy is to, you know, cut the high-end players into more and more of the industry share of the revenue and grow the casual player so that they can just be fed to these people, that's spiral economics. You know, that is not a proper way to set up your industry. You cannot just take money from 80% of your customers and feed it to 20% of them and expect that 80% to stay around for long. So the racing industry is going to have to figure out what the balance is here. It does seem out of whack right now. You know, it would be one thing if these guys were profitable, you know, against the takeout. They're not. They need the rebates to grind out their 1% or 2%. So I do think the racing industry is going to have to take a look at this real soon, because it just doesn't seem like it's a viable business model long term.
In terms of ideas and innovation, and Steve Crist for years beat that drum that new bets and wagering innovations were the key to ongoing growth. And the fixed odds wagering conversation, which has been around forever, I mean, literally for 20 years, Stan Bergstein, I can recall him not just talking about it, but having that study that included what TAB was doing in Australia and New Zealand. and the imputed odds, the single pool concept that was floated and part of the discussion, what would move the needle on these topics? How does that have to happen?
Well, the needle got moved, you know, needle got moved as far as it could go once the Supreme Court struck down PASPA. If states are now going to authorize fixed odds wagering on sports, then racing needs to be there in those legislatures saying, do not put language in that bans us from offering fixed odds wagering as well. If you're going to allow fixed odds wagering, if you're going to allow bookmaking, then allow racing to do it as well. I think that would be a check on the ability of the computer systems. You know, there are horses that you can watch drip or go down, and being able to lock in a price if you think this thing is going to get hit late would be a great option. I mean, it would absolutely be an option that most horse players would welcome, especially those guys that do enjoy a big win bet, you know, here and there on a horse they really like at, you know, 6 to 7 to 1. So I think that would definitely be a benefit to racing. Horse players would obviously enjoy it. And then you'd also have an option for the new guys if they do show up, who like fixed odds betting on sports, and might be enticed to bet on racing because they're familiar with that concept and not necessarily familiar or comfortable with the parimutuel concept. As far as single pool wagering, I actually posted an article I did on in 2011 on that concept just because it did get mentioned at the Jockey Club. They want to do a test of the system. The only place I know of that has specifically authorized is New Jersey. That's a state where you've got sports wagering, you've got the betting exchange operating. So I'm assuming they'll be looking to New Jersey for that test. Now, it's also been running in Hong Kong for the past 4 or 5 years. It's well received there. They're not merging all of the pools into one single pool. They're merging select pools, but they like the results there. The downside is that what are the groups that are really going to bet from this? The robots. The robots are really going to benefit from a single pool wagering. So so we'll have to see how that works out. For most players, I don't think they'll notice. But there are some issues, and I did bring those up in the 2011 article, but it's something I'll be revisiting soon. So,
and I just retweeted that piece that you wrote for those, and I remembered when we talked about the topic 7 years ago. The topic that we should go back to that you touched on in the opening, Matt Hegarty with us reviewing the round table, and the idea of the Jockey Club stepping in and helping potentially distressed tracks. They also talked about their concern about the drift of revenue and handle from, you know, the smaller tracks to the larger. They talked about potentially offering grant funding to help undercapitalized racetracks improve their product offering, and most notably the high definition. And it's astounding that still 2/3 of tracks are not sending out a high definition signal. Talk a little bit about what you perceived and how far the Jockey Club would go in this direction.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, we don't have a whole lot of guidance on what their strategy here would be. They have said that, you know, they could either buy it outright or lease it. I think the leasing option is the one that's most interesting. Let's face it, there are a lot of racetrack operators out there who also operate casinos who would rather not deal with the racetrack side. You know, is the Jockey Club going to be looking at some of these places that are in large markets where they might lease the operations, turn it into a nonprofit, and try and improve the live racing experience there? That might be an option. Then you have small tracks in major markets that are just kind of hanging on. A lot of those tracks, you could say, have been hanging on just because the gambling card is still in play. You know, who knows down the road if they might get authorization for that. So the Jockey Club is just basically indicating that since live racing is the way you make racing fans, and I think that's, you know, survey data and all your anecdotal data is going to support that, that you have to have live racing locations in the large metropolitan markets in the U.S. So they're saying that, yeah, maybe we can step in, but at the same time, they're not going to get involved in a bidding war with other racing companies for a racing asset, which I think is a careful, you know, kind of cautious move for them to make, and probably a good one. So,
having attended as many of these as you have, evaluate just the tone, because it felt and feels a little different, and it was certainly refreshing not to hear the Lasix conversation brought up again, as it was, you know, for many years in the round table. It seemed to me that the Jockey Club made a concerted effort to, you know, to reach out to the industry and to sound a tone that they want to help, that they want the industry to look to them to, you know, to be a guiding force for good, and to help, you know, whatever, you know, the issues are that are vexing the game.
Yeah, I think, you know, you have to look back in 2011. The McKinsey report at that time was forecasting, I believe, a 25% decline in wagering over the next 5 years. That did not happen. Handle stabilized. There are some encouraging signs for national handle right now. The negative to those encouraging signs are that, you know, perhaps a lot of it is computer wagering. You know, we don't know how good that is for the game long term. But that slide that McKinsey was predicting in 2011 didn't happen. Handle stabilized. So I think you have an economic backdrop right now in which, at least for the existing tracks or the tracks that are tier one, you know, their numbers are going up. Their handle per race is going up. That's the best metric to use. And purses are, average purse per race are at an all-time high. So, you know, it's certainly the purse distribution now is not turning, you know, the racing ownership side into a for-profit business. But you can hit, you know, home runs out there, and at some of these tracks, you can expect at least a decent return on a horse. So I think the situation has changed a little bit in the sense that the economic picture looks better than it has in years past. But Lasix did not come up. There was talk about the bill, but there are midterm elections coming up. There are a couple people that involved in the bill that may be facing a challenge. I think especially in Kentucky with Andy Barr, he's got a pretty tough challenge from the left there. And, you know, from all indication, it seems like he's ready to kind of bow out of this until the midterms are over. So I don't think we'll see a whole lot of movement on that this year, but the Jockey Club is certainly going to push forward on the version of the bill that it favors. And we'll just have to see down the line if there's going to be any kind of compromise on race day medication, which is, of course, just Lasix. So
one small thing that I noted from early in your coverage that didn't get a lot of discussion, there's certain nuts and bolts elements around the game, Matt, that have come into focus and certainly are used like a pinata for disgruntled players. One of them is the simple timing of races. And Craig Milkowski, certainly from Timeform, this is his absolute it's more than, I can't even call it a pet peeve. It's his the one thing that he focuses on, and
yeah,
time.
It's his white whale.
Yes, it is.
This isn't a pet. This is a big white whale. But there's still all kinds of problems with the timing of races, problems that shouldn't exist. So the industry's got to get a handle on this. It takes upending, you know, so many years of tradition. There's competing players in the market, and now the Jockey Club is testing its own system. It's a GPS based system, satellite GPS. Golden Gate is actually now using it as their official timer. They have some other tests in place at Laurel, and I'm trying to think of another track. Will that solve the problem? Anyone who's had to deal with geolocation data or anything on your phone using your GPS knows that it's not foolproof. It does, it's not going to operate perfectly all the time. But there has to be a solution out there. The industry is based on data. Horse players rely on accurate data. This problem needs to get solved, and it needs to get solved soon.
I want to add, fold in the law conference as well, and bring up the sports betting discussion, because it bridged both of your visits, and this is always a heavy news week for you when it comes to these events. Some thoughts about the way the sports betting discussions are being handled. It's coming up, of course, logically, at every one of these conclaves.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of people out there who think they can make money off it. So you're seeing a lot of people try to position themselves where if states do en masse in the next couple years authorize it, that they're going to be in a position to exploit that. The problem is that the field looks really crowded. It looks like a lot of people want to get in on this. I don't especially think racing is going to have a particularly strong position on this. They may be allowed to be locations for sports wagering, but I don't see anything down the line to suggest that they are going to be the only places that are able to allow it. So they're going to be in competition with other locations as well. In some sense, racing has been really involved in this, just kind of I'm trying to search for the good word, but because Monmouth Park was selected as one of the first ones, and because they were front and center in the challenges, and they were so aggressive in going forward, I think racing has focused on this to the extent that it doesn't reflect the reality of how the racing industry will benefit from this. I just don't see where there's a ton of revenue for racing in this type of betting. It could, it helps on the margins. It's nice to be able to offer both at your racing facility if you're fortunate enough for the state legislature to designate you as a location. But there's a lot of people out there that have a lot more political clout than racing that are trying to get quasi-monopoly status on this. And so I think it's going to be a tough road for racing in the future.
Another difficult area, and we've tracked it for several years, and whether it's with Eric Hamelback or Will Velli, the immigration attorney came up as well during the conference, immigration concerns and what is really becoming, as expected and as predicted, an acute labor problem. And we haven't talked about it in the last few months through the Triple Crown season, but it's worse than ever. And there's, frankly, the big outfits are even more hamstrung than smaller outfits who have got loyal and seemingly a very tight group of personnel. There's big barns that we understand that are having trouble, keeping up in terms of having enough help. What was the immigration panel and some of the fallout?
Yeah, the immigration panel, you know, the discussion of things that have been going on for 3 or 4 months in the racing industry. They don't have a whole lot of, you know, guidance. All they know is that it just keeps getting worse. One of the big things is that they rescinded the a provision in immigration law in which if you were issued an H-2B visa in the past, which is normally how workers on the backstretch get their visas, then you were automatically eligible to come back into the country for a period of years. They rescinded that provision, so that's had a big hit. They're severely restricting the amount of H-2B visas that can be issued. And you're right, the smaller outfits are not getting hit as bad as the large outfits, because the large outfits, it takes quite a bit of money actually to bring a worker in under an H-2B visa, so they were the ones that could afford it in the first place. So you just have a lot of bad feelings on the backstretch. The labor supply is very tight. They say they cannot get U.S. workers to do these jobs. You know, even at wages that are competitive with other industries, and that's probably because it's a tough job. I mean, if you've worked on the backstretch, it is not easy. It's long hours. It's variable hours. It's hard work. I wouldn't hesitate to say it's crisis mode on some of these back stretches. It's very difficult for them to get the labor that they're accustomed to, and there's going to be impacts on a lot of these outfits.
Well, and this continues to be, this was a slow-moving train accident. I mean, we could see this coming, and we started talking about it.
Yeah, and Congress did try and intervene. You know, Congress did try and intervene. They they responded to the concerns of their constituents and the administration, using its discretionary power, decided that congressional law should basically be cut to a 25% of what was authorized. So that took people by surprise. They thought Congress stepping in would at least allow for a little more sunlight there, and that didn't happen.
There was also one other activity, and the NTRA, the legislative review. Did you make that?
Yes, I did. Yeah.
Some thoughts?
There were some updates. You know, a lot of that was immigration as well. The updates on the tax withholding. Everyone appears to believe that is safe. That there isn't going to be any kind of new look at that. So at least the best thing to happen to horse players in the last 20 years appears safe for now. So that's good news there. But like I said earlier in the conversation, the midterms are coming up. Unless something has solid 100% support across the board, nothing's going to get done until those are over. There wasn't a whole lot different than what you might have heard last year, except for last year they were pretty excited off the record at that time that the tax interpretation was about to get approved, and as we saw, that did happen. So,
well, the withholding change, you know, with just a giant home run, and there's actually been
I haven't signed a ticket yet since it went in.
How about that? Is that from bad handicapping or just the rules?
Yeah. No, but I mean it's impacted, especially guys that play in the exact same trifecta pools, you know. Their numbers are that signers are down 98%, and I absolutely believe it. So
now this one part of that part of the offsetting of some of the, you know, the negative, bringing this full circle back to the roundtable presentation, and you know, some of those concerns about, you know, the handle numbers in free fall after the, you know, the economic meltdown, you fold in, we're going to talk to Boyd Browning next, as it happens, Matt, you fold in the bloodstock market, and then what you've just touched on, there there's more good news than bad news, frankly, for the industry overall.
Yeah, well, you know, the bloodstock market, I don't think it's any more complex than rich people have more money. If you look at the stock market, you know, historically, and then just overlay the bloodstock yes. market, they pretty much go in tandem. So,
well, then I guess we're good until the next disaster.
I think you can get that Boyd Branding interview over in like 30 seconds probably. So, you know, like, I don't know, you got lined up next.
Well, we'll let Boyd wax philosophic about the week at Saratoga, which resulted in a record New York bread sale and a very robust select sale. Matt, as always, a pleasure and appreciate it. How long are you staying around?
I'll be up here until the 22nd. So I've got my traditional Alabama weekend off. So looking forward to sitting there at the post and firing. So.
Enjoy, and I haven't seen you. I haven't seen you in the flesh. I only been reading and.
Well, you know where to find me, so I don't know. I don't know. It sounds like this is on you.
It is. I admit it. Matt Hegarty, everybody, who you should be following, and all the hard news. Matt does an unbelievable job. DRF Hegarty, HEGARTY. Let's take a break. We'll come back. Boyd Browning joins us from Fasig Tipton, and they're wrapping up. They've shipped those yearlings to their new homes, or in the case of the RNAs, back to their back to their original home, and they will reconvene with them. In September and October, if the yearlings are going to be reoffered to Monium and elsewhere, maybe Keeneland as well, and so forth. Boyd Browning joins us next.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Enjoy Daily Racing Form's best value with a multi-track PP pack. Get 5 full-card PPs featuring the day's best racing for only $6. Each DRF multi-track PP pack features full-card DRF pass performances for the top tracks you want to play. Handicapping articles and analysis, closer looks for key tracks, and selections by DRF handicappers. Daily packs and longer plans for all budgets are available. Download full-card PPs for 5 of today's top tracks. Visit drf.com/multi-track today.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired, PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Your barn is successful. Your program is tried and true. However, there are a few horses that aren't responding in the way you'd like. Does this sound familiar? Well, let Biomedical Research Labs help change that. Our clinically proven products will help your equine athletes become their very best. I guarantee it. This is Joseph Vellante. To learn more, contact me at 215-501-6880 and visit brlscience.com.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. RaceLens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats RaceLens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/racelens.